Who wants an orange whip? Orange whip? Orange whip? Three orange whips.
Ladies and gentlemen, we can all agree that 2014 has been, or I should say was, an utter train wreck, we'll say, for the Boston Red Sox. But I am rising above the carnage by transporting my brain to an earlier time, a better time, not the day we signed Eric Bedard, although that was glorious. I'm talking 10 years ago this month, 2004, baby, when the Red Sox won what would be amazingly, the first of three World Series titles in a 10-year stretch. It still doesn't even make sense to me. But anyway, to mark the occasion, we've been doing a series of podcasts with some of our favorite bloggers and writers and singers and DJs and Republicans and basically anyone we can trick into staying on the phone with us to talk about the glory of 2004 and how it has changed us all, how it has changed Red Sox Nation, and the impact that we still feel to this day. Today, the unlucky person we have somehow conned into joining us is Matthew Corey, who you all know, or you should know, from his stellar work at, he's at Over the Monster, he's at Sports on Earth, Baseball Prospectus, Forbes, anywhere fine writing is purveyed, his stuff. Did I forget any? You're everywhere.
No, that's it. Yeah,
that's it. He's even writing for your kid's school newspaper. He's everywhere. He's making it happen. Matthew Corey is here. Matthew, we're very, very, very thankful to have you with us today.
I'm honored to be here.
Excellent. I'm a longtime fan of your stuff. Very honored to have you here. And you're connecting us through the miracle of Skype. You're connecting, and you're on the West Coast.
I am Portland, Oregon, the beautiful city of where it is bizarrely sunny today.
So, is it?
Yeah. So I have elected to spend the day inside. Talking about the Red Sox.
Excellent. Has just before we get into that, has Billy Bean showed up seeking asylum yet in your city? That's coming soon, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah. Oh man, that's.
Do you have any openings?
Poor Billy Bean. I feel so sorry for him.
I do. Well, he's married to Angelina Jolie, so that's got to take some of the sting out of it. So.
That's true. He is. Yeah, and he wrote a book, a best-selling book. I understand.
Exactly.
I haven't read it.
But, so he's. We can't shed too many tears, but when he does show up, do tell him that we're thinking of him. Anyway, to commemorate the 10-year, and it's almost insane to believe that it has been 10 years since the Red Sox won the first of what would be 10 World Series. It sometimes doesn't even make sense to me. But before we get into the glory of 2004, I wanted to step back and talk about the horror that preceded it, which was 2003. So I wanted to ask you, when that infamous Aaron Boone home run was launched into the evening air, and a million people's jaws dropped, and I basically climbed to the top of the roof of the hotel I was in, where were you when that happened, and can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, my God. Yes. I was in Philadelphia, where there are very few Red Sox fans. I was at my then girlfriend's house, and she had gone to bed, and I was watching upstairs, and the room was close to the bedroom, so I had the volume I think pretty low, if not entirely off, depending on the amount of Tim McCarver I was allowed or I was capable of ingesting in one sitting. And I remember too much of it, what I remember. But actually, that's not true. I don't want to forget all of it, because it does sort of play into 2004, but I imagine we'll get into that. But the that specific moment, I don't know what it was, but I had the remote in my hand, and Boone hit that ball, and I grabbed the remote like I would have grabbed that ball if I could have. I turned it off. I turned the TV off before the ball went over the wall, and then I chucked the remote across the room, making a loud banging sound. And then I just sat there, man, and I just stared at a turned-off television for, I don't even know how long it was. A long time, it felt like. And then I think I got up and went to bed and didn't sleep for like a week.
It was a sick feeling, and I was actually in – I've talked about this far too many times, but I was actually in New Jersey when it happened, and
from,
which is always bad anyways, and on top of it, my favorite team just got knocked out of the ALCS. But I remember being there and then coming back here, and I think I finally came back a couple of days later. It was like coming back into a city after like – a nuclear bomb was detonated. You know, like there's some time to get everything clear out, then you're finally allowed to go back in. I'm guessing. I'm not speaking from experience, obviously. But anyways, I came back, and I remember as I crossed the state line from Connecticut into Rhode Island, I started picking up some of the radio stations, and it was like going from the New York stations to the Boston stations. It was like everyone. It was just awful, and it just made me even sicker because I was already in such a horrible state, and then to hear, you know, to be able to commiserate with everyone now that I was out of essentially Yankees country, it just kind of made it, I don't even like talking about it, but
it was really awful, and it was and it's weird in a way because it was probably one of the lowest points I've had. I mean, you don't want to say in your life. I've had a pretty good life. I've done pretty well, not in terms of a lot of stuff, but I'm alive. I'm not sick. I have a family.
Those are good things.
I'm in a house. These are all very good things, and I think that qualifies you as a winner globally speaking. So in that way, it's kind of good that one of my worst moments, being alive has come from a baseball team. But the way I felt in that moment and the weird thing about it, I think on top of that is that the Red Sox went to the ALCS that year. You know, like that's really good. That's really good. That's pretty much like a successful season. Going to the ALCS is really good. Only four teams get to going to the championship series. Only four teams get to do that a year. You got really close. Pat on the back. We'll get them next time, Sonny. But it just felt like the world collapsed around you. Like this is never gonna happen. We're never gonna get there. If we couldn't do it then, it's pointless. Why am I even bothering with this? Like I can't even lift myself out of this stupid chair with my legs right now. Why am I focusing all my energy on the Red Sox? Like, let's fix the environment or something. Let's change the topic.
I think that's you really hit the nail on the head there because I felt the same way after that. I'm old enough to remember '86 and I felt bad about that. But this hurt me even more. I mean, to your point, these are good things if you can point to some of the worst moments of your life and say, you know, it was a baseball team that caused it. I would say that's a pretty charmed existence. That's a good thing. There are certainly people who are dealing with shit a lot worse than Aaron Boone knocking one out. But I do share your feeling that when it happened, it took a couple of days, but I started thinking that's the closest we're ever going to get. Despite the fact we'd been in the world, I'd already seen us in the World Series.
Right.
After that, there was such a finality to it. After it happened, I just thought, that's it, man. That was the one ticket I had to punch in my lifetime, and it didn't work out. And I think that's what, to your point, with that team, you looked at that group of guys, and they seemed to rise to every challenge, and they seemed to make things happen when you expected very little of them. Although we expected a lot of them, considering the lineup and some of the talent we had. But I think that was what struck me the most, is like, if we can't get to the promised land with Pedro Martinez on the hill and Manny Ramirez and David Ortiz in our lineup, then maybe this shit is never going to happen in my lifetime. And I think that's probably what hurt the most.
Yeah, it's just looking back, like if you pull up the baseball reference page on that 2003 team and just look at it, like that was a really good team. I mean, obviously they had some, you know, some holes, but just the lineup was incredible. I mean, I think, you know, Ortiz exempted from this team. The worst hitter on the 2003 team was Johnny Damon, who hit .273, .345, .405 with 12 homers. He would have been the second best player on the Red Sox this year. And he was the worst hitter on that team. So it did feel like this was our shot, and we blew it somehow. And crap, I need to figure out something to do with my life.
Well, that's it for me in baseball.
Moving on.
Exactly. I've always wanted to know more about High Lie. How is that? How does that all work? Model trains, train spotting.
I have the fingers for knitting. What can I do?
Yeah, I puppetry is something I.
That's right.
Puppets. It all comes back to puppets. Okay, so thinking of the horrors of 2003 and how we can agree it was pretty much our lowest point of existence as a Red Sox fan, fast forward to 1 year later, a far more glorious time, when the final out was recorded and the Red Sox finally won the World Series. I will ask where you were at that moment.
I was in Philadelphia. I was at a brew pub on Market Street, which I'm not sure if it's there anymore. It was called the Independence Brew Pub, and it was this sort of large, impersonal, touristy kind of place. And I was there with one other guy who I was good friends with at the time, who was a big Red Sox fan too. And the TVs were on. There were some TVs that were on the game, and there were other TVs that were on. I don't even know. I don't think Dancing with the Stars existed at the time, but something equally soulless. And so we were the guys in the corner of this giant bar, who were watching this game as if our very lives depended on it, you know? When that last out was recorded, am I allowed to swear?
Go right ahead, man.
We freaked the fuck out, man. We started running around yelling and screaming and, you know, just acting like baboons. And my friend picked me up and he's smaller than I am. I'm not very big. And so, I guess in the moment, the adrenaline, and he just grabbed me and was carrying me around the bar while we're yelling. And people were just like staring at us like, who are these idiots, and will someone please throw them out?
Why are they interrupting Dancing with the Stars for the rest of us?
But we didn't get thrown out because we hadn't paid our tab yet. And then I just remember sprinting down Market Street in downtown Philadelphia and nobody else giving a rat's ass. But it didn't matter, man. It didn't matter. It was the greatest thing. I completely was fulfilled in that time, in that moment, and it was terrific. And if the Red Sox had not won any more World Series after that, you don't want to just like go, well, I give up on the rest of my life, but it would have still been worth it, I think, to go through everything just for that day, for that moment. So that's where I was.
No, I agree with you about it. It's worth it to go through everything, because I've always said that if someone came to me, if the gods of baseball came to me after 2003, after the ALCS, and said, how can we make this up to you? What happened is exactly what I would have wanted to see. It almost doesn't make any sense how it unfolded. I think that's the thing that I walked away from. It almost took a while to actually believe it happened. I mean, by the time we got to the World Series, it was almost like I was so mentally and physically exhausted. I mean, remember those games went on? They were like 12-hour games.
They seemed to
start at 4 and end at 3 in the morning. I mean, I know they didn't, but it just seemed like it. It seemed like that's all I did was watch baseball for a week, and you would just my throat always hurt, and I was always hungover, and you know, no people avoid me generally anyways, but I mean, they seemed to do it even more so then. It was just unshot, just gross, you know, just horrible. Pretty much how I live day to day anyways,
right,
but it was
right.
Just exacerbated by the fact that this was going on. But I think that's the thing I remember the most, is I just had to every once in a while say, is this actually happening? And it just sometimes felt like it wasn't, but I'm glad it did.
Yeah, it was very surreal. Like if you were, I'm sure this is not an original thought, but if you were to, try to pitch a story to Hollywood, a movie of how, you know, the you always have that sort of a story arc where, you know, the main character reaches their lowest point, and then they find redemption, and every little plot twist or plot point is fixed, you know, in a positive way. And life doesn't work like that, except in this case, it did work like that. Like Johnny Damon, who did nothing, right? Hits those two home runs in game seven. You know, Pedro came in and the chance to basically blow the game, right? I'm not misremembering that. There's a word, misremember.
No, you're not Mr. Clemens. It's fine.
Okay. Yeah. and yeah, so Pedro had, you know, kind of a chance to blow that game, and it felt just for a moment like, oh no, what's this? What's going on? Like this is going to get bad. And it got a little bad, but then it was fine. And, then I think Damon hit a second homer after that. And we were just like, okay, this next couple innings are going to be awesome. which is a really weird, thing to say about a game seven of a series that was so tight the entire way through. Well, with the exception maybe of game three, but anyway, yes.
Yes.
I don't know if my rambling answer answered any question you might have asked me before, but there it is.
I don't remember the fucking question. All I know is 2004, man. Just talking about 2004. I'm already getting jazzed. Just talking about it, I'm pacing. I'm just thinking about it. I'm reverting back to that 2004 mentality when I just see, I'm big on pacing. I'm big on a lot of things. Pacing's one of the legal ones.
Are you a person who watches the game like in a certain place, like in the room, like, and then if it's not going well, you have to get up and move? Like, that's what I do. That's what I did in 2004. Like, my girlfriend in 2004 came over to the apartment I was living in, and It's October. It's the wintertime in Philadelphia. It's cold outside. I have both windows open in my apartment, and I had no shirt on. Why? I don't completely know, but something in the universe told me that I needed to do that to help out the Red Sox. And so I was walking around the apartment while the game was on, with no shirt on and the windows open, and my girlfriend was like, what are you, insane? Like, close the windows, put on a jacket. And no, I didn't. And you can all thank me for not putting on a jacket because, yeah, anyway.
That's the reason.
That's right. That's why it all happened.
That's why it happened. I should hope at that
giant
point.
Idiot.
I should hope at that point you handed your girlfriend the grease paint and said, now put Damon's letters on my back and his number. Come on. Let's do this upright. Come on. Well, if you were to say that there was a and there's so many, I know it's difficult to point to one. That whole thing is a blur, and it is what it is. But if you could point to one quote unquote defining moment of that 2004 postseason, what would it be?
Defining moment, man. That is really hard.
Preferably one that involves you with a shirt on.
Well, that eliminates all of it.
That's why we won. He had to. The baseball gods told me I have to do this.
That's right. I've revealed myself on this podcast to be a complete creep show.
We had our suspicions. You just kind of cemented some facts for us. That's all. I'm just forwarding these recordings to Homeland Security to make sure they can do what they need to do. And I guess it is kind of difficult to point out when there's just so many. And I don't even know that, you know, when I look at it myself, I think the only thing that I can point to as a defining moment from my perspective, mm-hmm. and I can't even remember which freaking game this was. I think it was game six. Mm-hmm. In New York, when Keith Foulke struck out Tony Clark with what I think was the tying run aboard. In any other universe, at any other time, the ex-Red Sox player always sticks his foot up our ass. That
right.
always happens.
Right.
You know, it just does. It's just the way it is.
There are so many points. Like you've got, you know, of course, Dave Roberts' stolen base. You could point to, you know, the game three where the team just got destroyed at home, and it was like, oh my gosh, we're going to get swept. And then, you know, then of course Ortiz hit the home run in what was it, the 450th inning of of game four, and you know, at that point it felt like, well, at least we're not going to be humiliated by getting swept. And there's still a glimmer of hope. But I think, to me, the maybe the best moment, my favorite moment was Damon's grand slam in game seven. Is that was the moment, the first time all series where I felt like, oh my gosh, we're going to win this.
I can put my shirt on. That's an excellent point, because I think that was the point where a lot of people finally felt they could exhale a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Ortiz hit a home run. I'm looking at it now. I don't have this necessarily all off in memory, but Ortiz hit a home run in the first inning. So the Red Sox were up 2-0 in the first inning. And then in the second inning, Millar single, Bill Miller walked, and then Orlando Cabrera walked to load the bases, and that's when Torrey took Kevin Brown out and put in Javier Vasquez.
There's a yeah. name.
Right, I know. and Damon, who I think was I don't know if he had hit all series at that point. And you know, had continued to hit leadoff. Oh no, he did. He singled to lead off that game. But that might have been his first hit all series.
And he was like 7-for-7 in that game or something, wasn't he? Like,
yeah.
12-for-12 or something.
Gosh, yeah. And then he hit that home run, and he's got that swing where like some guys, when they hit home runs, they have this like big uppercut thing, and you can just see them like lift the ball up into the air. And Damon's swing was just this like, it was completely flat, and I still don't know how the ball got any lift behind it. And it was just like, it was like, almost like if you're closing a door, like you grab the door handle and you just swing the door around, and there was never any lift in the swing, and the ball just went, woo! And I can put my clothes on.
At that point, everyone had left. The building had been evacuated, but he's still there. No, that's an excellent point, though, because I felt the same way when that happened. And you know, you think about it, you could literally, and you could talk, a Red Sox fan at least could talk for days. I mean, if we decided we're going to do this till next Tuesday, I guarantee you and I could sit here and talk about that, or stand here, as the case may be, and talk about it, because there was just so much that went on. I do remember, and I hope I'm not misremembering this, to borrow an expression from you and from Roger Clemens, but I believe also that in that series, Hideki Matsui was a huge pain in our ass, and then Pedro knocked him on his ass, and I think he went 0 for whatever for like the last 2 or 3 games. I think that happened at one point. Like, he was croaking us, at least, you know, doing something every time I got up. And I remember Pedro buzzed him inside, and like, that was the last we heard from him for that series. Again, that might be one of those things that through the years, in the grand storytelling tradition, I've actually made bigger than it is. Maybe that didn't actually happen, but it's kind of how I remember it. Like, Matsui getting knocked on his ass and then never quite doing anything else that factored into a decision in the rest of the series. So.
No, I remember that as well. It's hard to say if that, you know, what kind of impact that has. I mean, I know that if someone threw a fastball at my head, I would be terrified. But if I were standing in against Pedro, I'd have been terrified to begin with. So there'd be no additional terror. Although maybe I would, at that point, would just leave. Like, I don't need this. I don't need this. But the Yankees scored 32 runs in the first 3 games, and they scored 4, 8, 10, 13 runs in the last 4. So, yeah, whether that's Pedro, almost drilling Matsui, or just a combination of you know, good pitchers riding the ship, or you know, all of that together. I mean, Things turned quickly.
It was a perfect storm of pretty awesome shit in many ways.
Yes, it was.
Everything kind of came together. When you think about the Red Sox in the 2004 postseason, is there any – I'm going to speculate that I might know your answer to this, but I'll ask you anyways. When you think about the Red Sox in the 2004 postseason, is there one player that immediately comes to mind?
One player. Well, it's got to be Ortiz, right? I mean, I guess we get into it could be that there's so many guys who played so amazingly to make all that happen. But I think if I have to pick one, it's probably Ortiz. I mean, Folk was incredible. The Dave Roberts stolen base obviously was incredible. Maybe the thing that still blows my mind the most, though, more than any. More than the way that any individual Red Sox player played, it is that the umpires didn't screw us over.
Right.
They had so many chances to screw us over, and they didn't. And it was like the A-Rod slap play?
Right.
No, they somehow. I mean, the Yankees were going to score a couple runs on that play, and the umpires somehow before replay. Actually reversed the call and got it right. I still remember, Jeter scoring and doing his little, fist pumping thing. Yeah, the Yankees.
And, yes.
The ghosts of the past have returned to, kick this team in its butthole. But the umpires huddled and I also remember. I don't even know who the umpire was, but I remember the way he moved his arm when he called A-Rod out and pointed Jeter back to second or first or wherever he had to go, and that was incredible, And there was a home run call that I think they initially called it a double, and then they realized it was a home run. It might have been Bellhorn's actually.
That's right. It was.
A Yankee fan reached into over the wall or something, but the ball went over anyway. I don't remember all those specifics, but so I think that's the thing that still to this day shocks me. There was a series was so close; it could have really gone either way, and one messed up call by umpires who it seems mess things up all the time. I mean, it's really hard to be a major league umpire, but. But still, they mess things up all the time, and how did they not mess all that stuff up?
That is an excellent point, and it's interesting. For all the times I've analyzed this, and when you mentioned the umpire coming out and pointing and gesturing that A-Rod was out and that Jeter had to go back, and that's when A-Rod kind of did that whole what'd I do?
Yeah, he put his hand on his head.
What? What'd I do? I didn't do nothing. But
exactly how A-Rod talks. Yeah.
That was a recording of him. That was actual audio I lifted. What are you talking about?
What's going on?
But that, you're right in that. That's you remember that so vividly, and I remember. And as someone who still wakes up in a cold sweat. When I hear the name Tim Tuchita and think of the phantom tag and Chuck Knobloch and all that stuff from – when the hell was that? 99? Was that 1999? It's amazing. You are dead on that there were so many opportunities for us to get fucked, and it all worked out the right way. And it's before they had the chance to challenge these things, and we're just very lucky. And when you figure also that – and that A-Rod slapping there happened in their house, which is always where it's a little tricky. You never quite know how these things are going to go. You have to wonder if the umpires consider, some people in the stands here might have tactical nuclear devices. I mean, always a consideration in Yankee Stadium. Yet, and they still got it right. So that's I had never even considered that. And that's an excellent point. You're right. I mean, I think that is an amazing thing to take away from that they really did a good job and got these things right.
Absolutely.
Looking at the ALCS and then looking at the World Series, in my opinion, the ALCS was bigger than the World Series. I know that sounds bizarre because the World Series is the ultimate goal, but honestly, by the time we tore through the Cardinals, I was just so. I don't think I ever got up from the floor. I think that people just walked over me, and they just kind of turned the TV and I looked up and watched the last four games. But in many ways, did you kind of get especially in the wake of 2003, did it seem to you like if they hadn't won the World Series, it might not have stung that much because of what they did to the Yankees?
No.
They had to win. I didn't take my shirt off for nothing. They had to win it all.
Well, I mean, in my mind, it was, you know, beating the Yankees was better. I have much stronger feelings about the Yankees than I do about the Cardinals. You know, the way that the, you know, the history had unfolded with 2003 and you know, going back, you know, before my lifetime, the way that those two teams have interacted. So I, you know, obviously to beat the Yankees and to do it the way that the Red Sox did it, was, you know, all the superlatives you can come up with. But I think that if the Red Sox go and lose to the Cardinals, it kind of becomes like devalued a little bit. Like the fact that the Red Sox won the World Series that year lets us focus on the ALCS.
Right.
If they go and lose to the Cardinals, then it's like we lost to the Yankees in 03 in that awful way. We came back and we just did this amazing thing where we are the only team to ever come back from, you know, down 0-3. We did it against this great team and we kicked the crap out of them. And then we still fucking lost. Can you believe we still fucking lost? And of course they didn't. But I think that that's how I would have reacted probably. Yeah, I think beating the Cardinals, sort of validated, you know, the ALCS win, and it almost lets us focus more on that. I mean, it was certainly much more dramatic. I mean, beating the Cardinals was, you know, completely anticlimactic, and I'm glad that I as a fan can feel that way, because the players at the time didn't. Like, clearly they knew their job was still in front of them.
Right.
And so they could, you know, focus and get that done, but, yeah, I think that you know, beating the Cardinals was it was so stress free compared to beating the way that the ALCS unfolded.
I can sit down for these games.
Yeah, right. I don't have to put underwear on my head.
Exactly.
So yeah, it's kind of weird the way I think about them, because it feels like once we got through the Yankees, okay, done deal, we're finished. And that's kind of how, you know, how it almost felt at the time. I mean, what in the first game, the Red Sox were up, what, 7-0, and I think, and then the Cardinals came back to tie it.
Right.
And then the Red Sox scored two more, and the Cardinals tied it again. And I think that was the last time that the Cardinals had a tie score. I mean, I don't even think they led all series.
No, I think you're right. I don't think they did at all. And I think literally Mark Bellhorn hitting that home run off Tavares that bounced off Pesky Pole, I think that was pretty much the unofficial end of the World Series. I think from that point on, we were basically in the driver's seat.
Right? Yeah. So, may all our future World Series wins be so stressless.
Exactly, yes. Well, looking at our success and obviously 2013, if you went back in time to talk to 2003 you and tried to explain to him, you know, what the things that you have seen in the last 10 years as far as the Red Sox are concerned, I mean, you'd think this would be some 12 monkey shit. You'd be like,
yeah.
It'd be like, this is not, get out of my face, you're crazy. But looking at our success in 2004 and obviously the things that happened in 2007 and last year, As Red Sox, this is such a fucking weird ass question, but I almost feel obliged to ask it. I mean, has it kind of changed us for the better or for the worse? I mean, I think it's changed us for the better. I know the popular perception around sports outside of Red Sox Nation, if you will, is that the Red Sox fans in general went from being these lovable losers to these insufferable pricks who now feel entitled and now feel, oh, if we have to do this. When, you know, I grew up, you know, a Red Sox playoff appearance was like a UFO sighting. I mean, it was, you know, it was like, are they real? Do they exist? Can this happen? Can we play after the regular season ends? I'd just be interested in your take on anything, any observations you might have on, speaking for yourself as well as a Red Sox fan, and how you may approach things a little bit differently after 2004. Are you a little less violent and at least when it comes to watching the games?
Yeah, things, it matter, it's sort of sad to say, but it matters a little bit less, because we already got there, you know, so getting there again is awesome. You know, last year was so much fun, last year being 2013, obviously. You know, it all sort of, pales, you know, in comparison to 2004. And yeah, that's just, I mean, for myself, like, all I really want out of the Red Sox now is I want an intelligent organization that doesn't do too many stupid things. I want them to be able to – it's kind of like what I want out of my government. Like, I just want people to do something that's based on, like, sound information and that you know, that makes sense to a certain, you know, to whatever degree that they're taking that information into account and you know, producing a conclusion that logically follows, you know, from the data available. Like, you know, 2014, it sucked, but I can understand, like, why the team did what it did and sort of why things happened the way they did. And, you know, the result was not at all what I think anyone wanted, you know, from a Red Sox fan standpoint, but at least it makes sense. And I myself have some confidence that, you know, that the organization is going to do their best to, you know, to rectify the situation, to improve the team. You know, they're going to use analytics. They're going to use scouting. They're going to attempt to, you know, use the draft and international free agency and all these different aspects and bring them all together and try to create another good Red Sox team. And they're not going to skimp on money. They're not going to, like, you know, avoid something because of some sort of, you know, not data-based belief about, you know, well, we got to have small ball, you know, or whatever it is. They're going to actually think things through and come up with a good explanation and a good solution, and they're going to try to implement that to the best of their ability. And that's all I want out of them. And if that produces a winner, that's awesome. I mean, we were talking a little bit, you know, Billy Beane and stuff, and I really do believe, you know, what he says to about, you know, how his shit doesn't work in the playoffs. I don't think it's that his shit doesn't work in the playoffs. I think it's that most people's shit doesn't work in the playoffs.
Right.
I mean, you get eight teams, only one of them wins. So, you know, seven out of eight people's shit is not going to work.
Exactly.
So, you know, and we've been –
why don't they put that in the promos in TBS? You know, that builds a little more drama. Seven of eight teams, their shit will not work. The drama.
Right. Whose shit will not work today?
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, so I got off the rails on the word shit there. But but I do think that you know, in some alternate reality, you know, the great Red Sox team of 03, the great Red Sox team of 04, the great Red Sox team of 07, you know, bad luck intervenes or whatever happens, you know, Ortiz steps on a base wrong and twists his ankle and isn't available for the postseason, or, you know, Tony Clark's ground rule double hits the top of the wall, bounces straight up and becomes a bases clearing triple, or whatever it is. You know, you're always just so far from winning, and you're always just so far from losing. And I think we've been really fortunate that things have come out, you know, our way so often recently. It almost makes it seem – I'm not even going to finish that sentence. I'm not going to finish that sentence. I will not. I'm going to stop.
It is an embarrassment of riches, considering what we were all raised on. You know, yeah. It's amazing to even think. And I do agree. I mean, the playoffs are – everything is out the window, because sometimes – you see the weirdest shit happen, and what we saw in 2004 is really testament to that. I mean, for all intents and purposes, you know, the Red Sox in many ways probably shouldn't have made it past Game 4, but then they turned around and they won eight straight games, and it nothing that I had seen in my lifetime would lead me sober to believe that that was something that was going to happen. That was like the Loch Ness monster or something. There was no evidence, nothing I could point to in my lifetime that would serve as evidence that was something, that was a reality that could be, and it did. So it's, I think it is as I'm fond of saying, it's house money at this point. I've already seen three more World Series than I ever thought I'd see in my lifetime. So you can't kill a dead man at this point. So
it's really true.
I'm just rolling with it.
I think the best Red Sox team, you know, of my lifetime is the 2007 team. You know, at least in comparison to the league as a whole. And even they were down, what, 3-1 in the ALCS to the Indians?
Yep.
I mean, easily could have lost that series and never even made it to the World Series, where they won by beating the crap out of the Rockies. I'd just like to point that out. But yeah, so I think you're always, you know, sort of on the head of a pin there, and it's easy to look back and see how things unfolded and sort of, you know, the storyline, and you know how things are gonna end, but you're always just that close to failure, so especially in the playoffs.
Exactly. All right, the last and possibly most important question.
Uh-oh.
A little bit of role playing here. All right, so you're a bartender in a bar in Boston. You're working the bar. Dave Roberts, Ted Williams, and John F. Kennedy all walk in simultaneously.
Well, Kennedy's out already. Go ahead.
You can only give one of them a free beer. Who gets it?
Man. Yeah, Dave Roberts. Oh, I'm going to hell for that. Williams is this just incredible otherworldly figure. Like, if you look at his baseball reference page, it's just sick. And I feel like, you know, my answer to this question is penalizing him for being on a bunch of crappy teams in a crappy organization that was, you know, run by a bunch of racist cronies at the time. And it's you know, really shouldn't reflect negatively on him in any way, and yet, unfortunately, based on my answer to your question, it does.
I don't care that you were fighting in World War II. Dave Roberts gave us a World Series.
Yeah,
that's true. I mean, it's funny. You hear these conversations about the greatest Red Sox player of all time, and they talk about Ted Williams, they talk about David Ortiz, and to your point, I think players like Williams and Yastrzemski to some degree, I think they are kind of victims of the times in which they were playing, times that were marked by really, really shitty teams. I mean, there were some wonderful things that happened, but there were also some really, really horrible things that happened. And you look at someone like Ortiz, and our memories of Ortiz, you know, I'm not old enough to remember, at least not yet, but I'm not old enough to remember, you know, a great deal of Yaz's career. I was alive when he retired, and I remember watching his last few games in the 80s, the early 80s. But I think when you talk about Ted Williams, you talk about David Ortiz. When you think of David Ortiz, you remember, hey, we won three World Series when he was here. He has to be the greatest of all time. You could go on for days on that whole topic, but I think, you know, obviously just a goofy question, but I think it does make you think in terms of the two players there. JFK, screw him. So he saved us from nuclear annihilation at the hands of the Soviets. We got a World Series from Dave Roberts. So, but it's true. I feel the same way. I think that there are certain players who were great and just unfortunately were kind of tethered to these not so great teams. Which, you know, if you had nine Carl Yastrzemskis in the lineup up and down in 75, you know, they might have won the World Series. But it's just, you know, it's just how things go.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think they would have won the World Series. I think they would have been the best team in baseball easily with nine Yazes. But yeah, I mean, and you know, when you think about you know, what Ortiz did in 04 and in, you know, just last year in the World Series, you know, if the players around him aren't good enough, he doesn't get that opportunity. So you have to be good, and you have to be lucky, and you have to be surrounded by people who are good and lucky and smart. And even then, sometimes it doesn't work out.
Good and lucky and smart, unfortunately, are three things that have eluded me through most of my life, so I just kind of put it on. Well, at least those of you who are still listening, the key takeaways here, Matthew Corey says, screw you, Kennedy and Williams, at Dave Roberts. Dave Roberts gets the beer. That's the important takeaway right here. Fuck democracy, Dave Roberts gets the beer. But you know what? I'd do the same thing. That would have been my answer, too. That's what I argued when Menino, someone joked about David Ortiz should run for mayor, and someone, you know, obviously it was said tongue-in-cheek, and someone said, well, that's preposterous, and I chimed in stupidly saying, because it's the internet and because you just do things stupidly, I said, David Ortiz brought us three, it was, at the time it was only two World Series, what the fuck has Menino done for us? And, you know, it's, right. And, you know, that's the way I feel sometimes. It's, you know, some, I look back on some of the happiest things of my lifetime, and I guess in many respects it has been something of a charmed life, but the fact that I was able to experience three World Series, that shit, a lot of people don't get that shit. So we are truly living in magical times.
Yes, very much so. I agree.
Excellent. Matthew Corey, thank you very, very much for your time and for indulging me in this trip down memory lane. For those of you who do not, if you're listening to this, you're reading Matthew Corey. I don't give a shit. If I have to come to your house and print his shit up and put it in front of you, you should be reading it. He's at Over the Monster. He's at Sports on Earth. He's at Baseball Prospectus. He's at Forbes. As I said, he's everywhere, wherever fine writing is purveyed. Also on Twitter at, I'm going to get this wrong, so you say it.
At MattyMatty2000.
MattyMatty2000. So if you're not following him already, you certainly should be. Matthew, thank you very much for your time. And when the Red Sox win the World Series in 2015, we'll get back together and compare notes on this.
Can't wait, man.
Excellent. Take care.